Welcome to another chapter of Family Fiction's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast, where we give you a deeper look into your favorite Christian authors and the inspirations, research, and methodology that goes into writing the books you love to read. Here's your host, Jamie Vaughn.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jamie Vaughn with Family Fiction's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast. Today's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast is brought to you by Revell, a division of Baker Publishing Group. On today's episode, we have Jennifer Dybel, and she is here to talk to us about her latest book called Lady of Galloway Manor. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Hi, I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I want to hear all about this book. I love Ireland. It's a dream of mine to go there. Can you tell me the storyline?
Absolutely. So this book follows Annabeth de Lacy. Her family has just moved to Ireland, to Galway County from England. Her father has been sent there as the new landlord. So this is in 1920. A lot of people don't know, British landlords still ran kind of what we know as the Republic of Ireland today. So he's been stationed there, and without all the trappings of the court life, she's a little bit bored. She's the oldest of two daughters. And so she can kind of nag daddy into letting her do some things that might not always be appropriate for a lady of the court, and manages to convince him to set up an apprenticeship for her with the makers of the famed Clotta ring, which she'd heard of but had never seen. And so she gets there, and her host is less than welcoming. He has known nothing but hardship and trauma and violence at the hands of the British. And so to have a woman, a British woman, no less, in his shop day in and day out is just almost more than he can take, because he is spending his lifetime peddling this lie of love, as he sees it. The Clotta ring stands for love, loyalty, and friendship, and is often given as engagement rings or tokens of affection from a man to a woman, or vice versa. And so he has to sit there and recount this legend over and over, and he's just tired of it. And so he has actually secured for himself an apprenticeship on mainland Europe in an ironworks company. And he's just trying to get up the gumption to tell his father. And just as he's decided to tell his father brings him in and introduces him to Miss de Lacy, with whom he must spend all of his time. So it's kind of this story of preconceived notions. There's definitely some prejudice there on both sides. You know, Annabeth has heard about the Irish being this sort of barbaric society, and that they need civilizing, and they need to be taught the proper ways of life. So she's very excited to come sort of help them. But when she gets there, she realizes this is a people of great beauty and culture and depth and art and music. And surely an uncivilized people wouldn't be able to create such beautiful things. And Stephen has to sort of spend all this time up close with his enemy. And they both start to see that maybe the things that they believe their whole lives about the other culture might not be true after all.
Okay. Tell me about where you get the inspiration for this book.
So the inspiration for all my stories at this point come from our time living in Ireland. My husband and I lived in Ireland for almost 7 years. We spent 2 years in Donegal, which is where my first book is set. And then we were in Galway for about 4 years. Our son was born there. We've been to this shop. The Clotta ring is a real thing. And the descendants of the original creator still run a jewelry shop to this day. Wow. And so I just started thinking, like, what would happen if, and, so a lot of things that we experienced in our time there make their way into our books. And I kind of try to give nods to all those wonderful things that we got to experience.
Yeah. So you did pick Galloway because you lived there, but setting it during the 1920s, why was that important to you?
Well, you know, it was just as the Irish War for Independence was starting to pick up. And having lived in the Republic of Ireland for so long, we got to see kind of up close and personal the ramifications of that struggle that still kind of color how they view the world today. Right. And we got to see, you know, there's still very much this animosity against the British, for right or for wrong. And for some people, it's very strong. And for others, it's just sort of this undercurrent. And so it really has shaped who Ireland has become as a country and as a people. And so I wanted to sort of explore that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I just find it a really fascinating time in their history.
Oh, wow. So one of the main threads is about the Clodagh Ring. Can you tell me like where that came from? I've always heard about the Clodagh Ring and I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I've seen people wear it here in America, but I would love to know where that origin story happened.
Of course. And it's the most romantic story you've ever heard. It's just wonderful. And for those who don't know, I didn't know that a Clodagh Ring was a Clodagh Ring until I moved to Ireland. And when I learned about it, I was like, oh, I've totally seen that design before. But for those who aren't familiar, it's a heart in the middle, and then there's a hand on either side, and there's a crown on top. And the heart stands for love. The hands stands for friendship, and the crown stands for loyalty. And it was created by Richard Joyce back in the 17th century. He was actually kidnapped by Moorish pirates and was sold to a goldsmith back in their home country. And he worked for him for many, many years and actually was extremely good at the craft. And he became so good that eventually when there was a treaty between the two governments and he was set free, the goldsmith who he had worked for begged him to stay. He actually offered his daughter's hand in marriage to get him to stay. But poor Mr. Joyce, alas, still was pining for his one true love who was back in Ireland, who they had been engaged to be married when he was kidnapped. And so he had envisioned this design as a token of his affection towards his true love. And when he gets back to Ireland, he had made this ring. She was still there. She had waited for him all of those years and he presented it to her and they were married.
Oh, well, we need a movie about this.
Yes, we do.
So what is the biggest hook in this book that's going to capture that reader's attention?
You know, I think there's a little bit of something for everybody. I've never met anyone who, when you say something about Ireland, goes, oh, Ireland, no thanks. Like everyone's like, oh my gosh, Ireland. So yeah. You've got the charm and the history and the culture of Ireland. You've got sort of this enemies to lovers kind of trope that a lot of people really love. There's history. There's a lot of true events that are woven throughout the story. And it's uplifting. You know, one of my goals and prayers for each story is that people would be encouraged in their own faith walk, wherever they are in that journey. And so my goal is for them to leave more encouraged and uplifted than when they picked up the book. So I would say if any of those speak to you, then this is probably a good book for you.
Yeah. And how do you bring authenticity to your stories?
You know, I try to, I want the reader to experience the same wonder that I experienced the first time I walked down the street in Galway and all the colorful buildings and the cobbled streets and the bunting crisscrossing the sky and all of those things. I try to pull what amazed me and put that in, as well as the faith element. I want it to feel natural. You know, when I first started reading Christian fiction, I loved it so much, but there were some, it felt almost like you had the obligatory plan of salvation chapter, which is an important part of faith. But I wanted it to be more conversational and I wanted it to be more natural to what we as Christians experience in our daily lives. So I just try to pull from those real experiences. I have the benefit of having friends still living in Ireland. And so I can pick their brains about, is this how they would react or is this an appropriate, you know, thing? And so just having been there, I know what it smells like. I know what that cold feels like and it seeps into your bones. I know how good a nice, properly made cup of taste at the end of a hard day. And so I just try to infuse all of that into the story.
I love that. I love what you said about salvation. I think sometimes when we're looking at Christian entertainment, especially, we try to make that the nice and pretty tied up with a bow, and salvation honestly has never really been pretty.
No,
we find ourselves in the depths of despair when you're calling out on God and generally, you know, and giving it over, and for him to get to us having salvation was not a pretty either. So I love your take on that, making it very real. I really appreciate that. So tell me, what's next on in the horizon for you?
I'm very excited. I actually just turned in the edits on book three yesterday. It was a St. Patrick's Day miracle that I got it done on time. This book, it does have a title, but we're going to hold it a little close to the vest for now, just a little bit longer. But this book actually takes us back to Donegal. We're going to explore a new time period, 1935. And it follows the story of Breonna Kelly, who is the lowest of the low scullery maids in an Irish boarding house, a boarding school. And she's always had this stirring within her that she was meant for more, but she feels trapped. She's an orphan. She's treated poorly. So it kind of has a Cinderella story kind of vibe, but I didn't set out for it to be like a Cinderella retelling. And the hero in the story, Michael Ray, his family is the closest thing to gentry that the Irish had at the time. And he comes because his cousin is getting herself into trouble and he's been sent to deal with her. And so there's this sort of mystery that ends up pulling Breonna and Michael together, and they have to sort of sort through these hidden treasures that they keep finding. And so it's a lot of fun. I'm really excited about it. And that is set to come out, Lord willing, next February with Revel.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll come back and talk to us again.
I would love to. Thank you.
I love the fact that we're talking about Ireland and filming this on St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, me too. I see you wearing your green. Makes me very happy.
Yes. So everyone, if you like what you've heard, make sure that you go and pick up The Lady of Galloway Manor. Shop local if you can. We would love for you to support your local Christian bookstore. And Jennifer, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see what's up next. Can't wait to read the book. Can't wait to see what comes out for you next year. And I'm totally jealous you lived in Ireland.
Thank you so much for having me. It was delightful.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Family Fiction's Christian Fiction Bookshelf Podcast. Stay up to date on all things Christian fiction at familyfiction.com. Christian Fiction Bookshelf is produced by Ross Kluver, hosted by Jamie Vaughn, and edited by Brandon Woolham. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts so you'll never miss a chapter.